Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice. We here at Shattered Lives are very excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator and getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of each case or organization featured the week before our show is aired. And please do also remember to, if you cannot listen to our show live from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, you can always go to Blog Talk Radio and Inside Lens and listen to our shows on our archival feature at any time, anywhere. Good evening, everyone. This is Donna Lady Justice welcoming you this Saturday to another edition of Shattered Lives. And I have very unique and very unusual show this evening because we are going to focus it on many an organization that deals with the missing. And I have to let you know, first of all, that I've written quite a few blogs regarding the topic of missing as well as other crime victim issues in addition to this show. If you'll go to my website, or please do keep in mind also that I'm available for presentation regarding homicide, grief issues, disability, and motivational speaking, many other types of things. So you can contact me at LadyJusticeDonna@gmail.com or Delilah@ImaginePublicity if you'd like to do that. So without further ado, I'd like to bring in, first of all, I'm very fortunate to have with me the president of Imagine Publicity, a person who's very knowledgeable about the missing and particularly human trafficking issues as well. She's the creative force. She's a master juggler. She's the PR expert. And in my opinion, the president of the best little PR company, Delilah Jones. Come on in and join us. How are you?
Thanks again for painting such a pretty picture. I hope I can live up to all of the colors you put out there.
Well, you do, believe me, you do. And we're so happy to have you each week, and thank you for taking time out on a Saturday. We know it's difficult. But some of us have other jobs during the week, and this is when we do it. Delilah, I just wanted to mention that I've been learning progressively through, you know, you being a tutor as well as other people, that there are many organizations out there, both large and small, that deal with the missing. Many months ago, I tried to do a tribute, and in that tribute, I mentioned Peace for the Missing, of course, the Q Conference we just came back from in March. We have MARC classes, Class for Kids. We have the Missing Youth Foundation in Michigan, and we also have other organizations that Maureen Renches, and I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, Mo.
And, it's a hard
and,
one.
I'm sorry. And Christy Davis is involved with. We have Finders Hope, and I welcome both of you. I think we have a very exciting topic to speak to this evening, so welcome to Shattered Lives, and I'm very happy to have you in for us to be able to share information. I think before I ask you some specific questions, I just want to make the general comment that, in my opinion, it doesn't matter geographically which corner of the state we're from, which organization we're affiliated with, what our particular take is, whether we're large or we're small, we're all dealing with helping people who go missing and their families, and that's what the focus should be, and that's my opinion. So I'm very glad to have somebody that's representing more than one, because we do not favor one over the other. And so with that, Delilah, this week, you had a very interesting show with Susan Murphy Milano with respect to a couple of teenage girls that were in the midst of a human trafficking situation. And I wondered, since it is related, if you might paint a picture of just what happened on that show, and then we will go specifically to talk to Christy and Mo regarding some other issues, because I think it's just fascinating what happened.
Well, it was, you know, it was a case where it was put out as two runaways from the eastern Tennessee area, and you know, and I've learned a lot about runaways from Maureen actually over the last few years that we've known each other online. You know, and I know she feels the same way I do. Runaways are kids that are either.
Hello?
Girls found out were lured by a couple of Hispanic. The girls were only 13, 14 years old. These guys are 19 and older. So, you know, you have a very wide age difference there. So in looking a lot closer into the case and getting a lot of people involved in it behind the scenes, the girls were able to be located. I don't believe either one of them is home yet. They're being held. They have to go to court, and so both of these families have really a long, long way to go now. Their whole world was shattered. Everything about their life and their lifestyle is going to be totally different from now on. And mm-hmm. I think we spoke to one of the fathers on Thursday, and this was the total unfairness of the whole situation. And with every missing person out there, families don't ask for this. I mean, you know, it's something that they're thrust into such limbo and chaos that your whole life is turned upside down. And I think, you know, both Maureen and Christy can speak to that from firsthand experience and know a lot more about it than I do. So I'm going to go ahead.
Well, let's bring Mo in first. Mo, I know some of your story in that initially your husband John went missing for 4 years and then reappeared, and that is something that we don't often see portrayed in the media, but in fact it does happen more often than people think. Was that your initiation into delving into this whole issue, and then you kind of went beyond that to help other people? Can you give us a little background?
Yeah, I won't go into my whole story because it's very long and involved.
Right, but just give us a little recap and then maybe what you're doing currently.
Sure. My husband did go missing in 2005. He reappeared I was given concrete proof in 2009. Mm-hmm. It's not quite a clear-cut picture. It's not like a husband walks out on his wife and she doesn't hear from him. You know, there's a lot more involved, something else went on that,
uh-huh.
because he's an adult, my hands are tied. I kind of walk with one foot in the missing world and one foot out because at the moment, we don't know where he is. Nobody has an email address, a street address, anything. So it's like he's still missing. It's a very involved case.
Right. Well, does that tie in with the whole concept of, you know, because it's an adult missing that people just don't pay attention, period, because they do have the ability to walk away if that's the case? Is that part of the frustration?
Yes, I don't believe they should have the ability to walk away. There's a lot more that goes into play. I mean, you were talking about a 24-year marriage at that time. You know, if nothing else, the police should be finding these people because of all the financial stuff that comes down, not to mention the emotional.
Right.
You get hit with a lot of financial things. My hands were tied. I had to go to a judge and get a court order for anything that I could do. It was almost like I had no rights of my own.
Uh-huh. And is this before the 7 years? I mean, is it still true that, you know, you have to wait 7 years to declare someone? Or
no,
that's
absolutely.
Is that changing now? That's changing, right?
That's absolutely false. It depends on the state. My husband went missing in Nevada, and that was 3 years where you can have them declared dead. And many times the courts, you know, depending on what proof you have, you know, might even do it sooner.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you can't.
But there are no legal rights for the spouse left behind. I mean, there's absolutely none. And so you're in this whole limbo. I mean, banks and lawyers and creditors and you name it do not understand the word missing.
Mm-hmm. And so they all come after you as the spouse, right? You're legally responsible for all the debts, et cetera?
Correct.
So
correct.
How did you deal with that, you know, at that point in time, and then you got to this point in time? Can you give us a little synopsis of that?
I just dealt with things one minute at a time, one day at a time. We owned two homes at the time. I had to let one home slide.
Mm-hmm.
I had to immediately start working a full-time and a part-time job, which I've done ever since then.
Uh-huh.
I just, you know, I could only do what I could do and had to let everything else go. I did pretty good, though. I mean, there wasn't too much that went, but one house went away, and one house I had to sell for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Lost contents of a whole home, almost two homes.
Right.
But, you know, as you're dealing with that, that's not the thing, because you're so emotionally into the search and
mm-hmm.
worried about your loved one. I mean, I was looking for my husband's bones. So
right.
I would come home after working two jobs, and then I'd be on the Internet all night long searching because there was
yeah.
no one spot to look for him. I mean, you had to, you know, I called coroners and media and all over the nation. It was just
right.
crazy.
And what kind of help did you have at that point in time? Did you have the help of like a pro bono private investigator or a particular, you know, organization, you know, like Peace for the Missing or what?
Peace for the Missing was not in existence at that
right.
time.
Mm-hmm.
I did get a private investigator. I had to hire a private investigator. And then I didn't even have a Bible on how to pick a private investigator. My husband was a very high-tech person. He was an IT person, probably one of the premier IT people in the nation. And I hired a PI who could barely send an email. So, you know, the guy was probably better looking for motorcycle gang people than an IT person. So, that was the one lesson learned.
I have to ask my PI friends from New York, how do you actually pick one? It's not like searching the yellow pages, I don't think. I don't know if that's
well,
what I think.
I think Donna, I think, too, and I think Maureen and Christy both can probably speak to this, is you know, this is not something that we have a handbook for. You know, when
right.
when someone goes missing, here's what you do. It's not like in the yellow pages or anything. So
yeah.
people are just caught off guard. You have no idea where to turn, who to listen to, and what to do. I mean, you don't have any way of knowing. So
yeah.
you know, and
I was very lucky. I had two people reach out to me in the beginning, and that was Kelly Jalkowski with Project Jason and Monica with Q.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
So I got probably the most excellent help.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't at the very beginning. It was maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 months into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if you had people like that, then, you know, that does make all the difference. And Christy, can you come in here and share your story in terms of your beginnings into the quagmire of dealing with the missing? I know that your son became missing. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. Up until June 26th of 2007, you know, I considered myself a fairly socially conscious person, you
uh-huh.
know, had tried to do help in the community and that type thing. And when I got that call, life changed totally. When I got the call that he hadn't shown up for work, hadn't shown up at home, hadn't shown up anywhere, run into the same problems that Maureen spoke of. You know, he's an adult at 26. So first you end up having to convince people that he truly is missing, that this
mm-hmm.
is totally out of character. He was a computer technician, never went anywhere without his backpack and his laptop and his backpack.
Mm-hmm.
It was at home sitting upright as if he'd been on the Internet and left for a while. We had actually real good response from law enforcement after the initial convincing them that, yes, he was missing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say after about 2 months, and they did, they pulled out all the stops. Now, it's not like on TV where, you know, everybody converges and you've got every type of law enforcement officer searching for them.
Uh-huh.
I had a detective assigned to it, and I believe he worked it to the best of his ability. But at some point about 2 months in, he came to me and he said, well, he said, I need to tell you where we're at. I said, please
uh-huh.
do. He said, we've done everything we can do to this point. We hope he shows up electronically. Of
mm-hmm.
course, they had his Social Security number and all the stuff to track him with if he shows up in the system somewhere. He said, but from here on out, it's up to the family. And I said, okay. You've got hold of
what
a mother.
What does that mean? What does that mean when they say that?
I said, you've got a mom who'll do whatever it takes to find her son. What do you mean? Who do I call?
Uh-huh.
What do? Because I had no idea. And at that point, had no idea that between 700,000 and 800,000 people are reported missing every year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's beyond my comprehension to even think that. So I realized then there was a whole part of the world going on that I had no idea about. He gave us very little direction. My family is all very computer savvy, so we spent time on the internet. We posted on every website that posts missing persons. We submitted everywhere we could submit. And one day a lady brought over to me a Reader's Digest that had an article about Monica Kaysen from the Q Center in it, and I read that. And I was having one of those nights, and when I say it affects everything, you know, you work for a few hours and you have to quit because you can't focus.
Right.
All different things go on in your head of what could have happened to them, because the unknown is the worst thing in the world. You know, if you lose a child to an accident or an illness, it's a tragedy, but you're able to mourn that person. And you don't move on, but you are then able to take the next steps in your life.
Right.
Well, the missing can't take those next steps.
No, you're in a state of constant inertia or limbo, right, all the time.
I likened it to a maze, that we were thrown into a maze without any clear direction as to where to go. And when we decided to set up Finders Hope, we incorporated a maze into our logo, because that's what it felt like I was running into all these walls and not finding any path.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that article about Monica, and I was having one of those sleepless nights that you're laying there imagining everything. And about 2 or 3 in the morning, I thought, well, I'll call that number and, you know, leave a message. And I figured somebody would get back to me in a few days. I work
mm-hmm.
in the business world where, you know, you don't take calls at 2 or 3 in the morning.
But let me guess, she answered right away.
She answered her phone, and she said, you know, this is Monica. How can I help you?
Wow.
And I was taken back. I already had in my mind what I was going to say for the message, because that's the kind of person I am. You know, you think it out. You figure out how to get all the information in a compact little message. And
mm-hmm.
so it took me a second, and then I gave it to her, and she said, I can help. And I tell you what, those three words took such a weight off of my shoulders, because I didn't know where to turn.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know, other than what I was able to research, and there's a lot of stuff out there. And anybody in the missing persons world knows there's a lot of garbage out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you're finding your way through this horrible maze without any guideposts. And when she said, I can help you, I knew, okay. And I told her, I said, well, let me tell you about myself. I don't expect you to come running down here to Florida and try and find my son, who went missing out of Jacksonville, Florida, if I didn't mention that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but if you tell me what to do, I know how to implement things, because that's my life work history is, you know, organizing and implementing things and getting things done. But you got to know what you need to get done.
Right.
So she started directing me to search and rescue teams that could come in and actually search areas. Law enforcement was a little taken back when I kind of took the lead on it and said, okay, I got teams coming in. It's from the Q Center for missing persons. They're coming in, and I want law enforcement support. And it's amazing how many of them would give you a cell phone number and say, if you find something, call me.
So they didn't argue that you took the lead, and they just kind of let you take over under Monica's direction.
Right. They just didn't have a whole lot of choice about it because I was going to do it anyway. But
good for you.
You know, a mother will do, a mother, a spouse, you know, for somebody that you love as much as you do a child.
Yeah.
In my case, it's a child. But, you know, you just don't let a lot of things stop you. I mean, I've done some crazy things in my search for my son. I've followed leads that I couldn't convince law enforcement to follow. But by getting in contact with Q and getting direction from her, then I started seeing as all these searches are going on, you know, this is something I could help with. This is something I may not be skilled yet to go into the woods and actually search, though I grew up in the woods. But my organizational skills will help. So I started volunteering, and that evolved, and we've got Finders Hope set up that we work hand-in-hand with Q, and I've just become the state coordinator for Florida to help with more cases.
That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. I'm real proud of that because, you know, I started volunteering, and our family's feeling was no family should have to go blindly into what we went into. The reality is many families do because the information isn't out there, and that's why so much of what we do is awareness. Radio shows like Donna help so much because people hear it and they begin to think about it. I'd never had any contact with a missing person in my life before Austin, so I just it touched my life.
Why we're here, and we're here to talk about the aftermath. And I was wondering, Maureen, would you be able to tell us, as a result of your experience, and then I know currently you're working as the administrator for Peace for the Missing, and you're very involved in NAMIS as well. What can you tell us about your association with both of those?
Peace for the Missing, I came on, actually I thought it was just another site that I was going to bring awareness. At that time I was being blackmailed and I wanted to warn the other families. And Delilah and Sarah had been putting things out on MySpace. And so I thought, okay, I'll jump over there. And I was really just going to use them as a way to get to the families to let them know about my blackmailer.
Well, you right in, didn't we?
Do what? I don't know
exactly
how, but we all clicked.
We were good back in the day.
But we all clicked and it all worked out. And it's been a great, we're not an organization. We're just a platform to give the families a voice. We can steer them to resources, and we're just there for them to really share their emotions, you know.
Right.
Be a support.
And I'm just going to jump in here. I think one of the things, and when Sarah and I first set Peace for the Missing up, it was, just like Maureen said, it's a place for the families to come and do what they want to do. There's no real rules and regulations other than everybody be nice to each other. But the whole thing is everybody there and everybody in this whole arena has a role to play. And some of these roles are going to be very small. You're never going to hear about it. And some of them are going to be very big, like some of the organizations like Q and like Project Jason and Finders Hope and all the others out there that are doing big, in my opinion, big things. But, you know, you have a lot of people who really have a heart for compassion for what these families are going through, and they don't know what they can contribute. And I think that's one thing we saw at Peace for the Missing was the fact that there are little ways that you can do little things that mean so much.
Can you give us a couple of examples if people are thinking that right now as they're listening or when they'll listen on the archives? What's a small thing if they think they're overwhelmed by doing something with a bigger organization? What's a small thing they can do?
I would say reach out to the families
and
ask their permission.
Make a cake, bring a cake to their door. What do you mean? Give a call and offer support?
One thing I think they could do is take on a missing person in your area. Make sure that you post that flyer everywhere, you know, like in Jacksonville, Florida, I could name 10 cases off the top of my head. Make it personal. Take one of those cases and put it everywhere in your area because you know that person's missing from that area.
Okay.
And it's amazing to me how I can go into the area that Austin went missing from, and we've done a lot of stuff, and people forget because they move on with their lives. So that's a simple thing that they can print a poster off of the website, and they can take the businesses in their area.
Mm-hmm. As long as you get permission. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. I really, really try to drum into anybody who says they're an advocate or anybody who's just, you know, the unknowing public that's out there offering a handout, make sure you ask the families. And the families are very accessible these days. Ask the families permission or ask them, what can I do?
Right. But don't you feel that they're in a state of being so overwhelmed frequently that, and as Delilah said, there is no handbook that they don't necessarily know, but maybe you can think of something that's practical and meaningful to do. You know, whether it's bringing castor oil there or putting up posters, you know, in the stores, and you know, I don't know if you can do it on telephone poles. I know that certain people have gotten arrested for doing things even with police permission. So I don't know if you could just, you know, willy nilly, you know, do that in your own town. I really don't know.
Just ask permission at the 7-Elevens, the convenience stores, the apartment buildings. You know, it takes a second to walk in and ask permission, may I post?
And most people,
make sure you're posting the family-approved flyer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the families have, and both of you know this, and Christy brought it to our attention earlier, you have to advocate for your own case. I mean, you are it. You're the boss, and your wishes have to be honored all along the way. And I think that's extremely important. But, you know, if you have a poster, if you can print out a poster on your computer, tape it to your car windows. Drive around. I mean, everybody's going somewhere. Take it on vacation. Your car is going somewhere, so a lot more people are going to see it. So it's everywhere you are.
Almost like your own Road to Remember tour, huh, Delilah? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of that, why don't we talk about that a little bit and let people know what that consists of, just in case. And then I also want to get to the to Christy regarding the healing retreat, because I think that's a very cool thing. And we are going to have Dwayne Bowers on this show soon, and I'm excited about that. So anyway, let's talk about what's the Road to Remember? What's that about?
Delilah, are you
Go ahead, Christy.
Okay, well, basically it started, I think, several years ago, and I don't have the gear in front of me right now, and I apologize, but Monica set that up to follow the footsteps of one missing person that to track and make awareness along her whole trail. That developed from there to every year. She goes to, I believe it was 11 states this past year, and she does food stops. And anybody can host them, whether it's law enforcement, a family member. This is another thing that people in the communities can get involved with is look up events and attend them, show support. Mm-hmm. But this road tour is all about bringing awareness to the missing. And this year we hosted one in Jacksonville, and it was so moving. They had been in Louisiana and Texas previous to being in Florida. And a case that I was fortunate enough to go out with them and search on in Texas, at the night she came into our road tour, she got the call the girl had been found. And it was very moving for all of us because though she was not found alive, that family was able to bring that young woman home and put her to rest at home and have some of their answers.
Well, can you tell me, say you pull up to your town in the Partridge Family bus, that's the Q Center bus or whatever, you pull up there in the town center, is there, so all these people show up in the town center, they're like a band, is what happens once she pulls up to these designated places?
Well, each, I think you're making it sound a lot bigger than what it is.
I wish it could be that big.
Yeah, it would be wonderful if it would be that big. And sometimes it's a small road stop, but it's whatever the person hosting it can come up with. Sometimes it's balloon releases. Sometimes it's a candlelight vigil.
Uh-huh.
They release butterflies. And it's to honor the missing from that area, you know, in each of the towns.
Okay.
And some years she goes south, some years she goes west, sometimes she goes north.
My husband was on the Kansas City one when she came to Kansas City, and it was a wonderful event, brought a lot of awareness.
What happened there?
Thing for the families, too.
Yeah, it does bring a lot of awareness, and they're great about getting as much press out there. And this is something that, you know, families don't, first of all, have the wherewithal or connections to be able to connect with a reporter or a TV station. Some do, some most don't. So, you know, this gives them an advantage when something like this is happening. There's press releases put out ahead of time. You know, we try to get a hold of as much press and have them there so that everyone who's represented is on the news. So, it's very difficult for families to come by press like that.
Right.
I just wonder how do they pick the
designated people who are missing along the route? Is it like she picked, you know, certain people along the route, or do you have to request to be part of that route? How does that part work?
She puts out what states she's going to go to for each year, and then people volunteer to host a site. So anybody, you know, a family member, and like in Jacksonville, my daughter and I organized it, but we had 7 or 8 different families that all participated and helped and attended. So you had 8 or 9 families that they're missing were focused on that night. You know, one of the things that I think as a family member, you know, I hate to think that people have forgotten my son. But also the other thing is the young woman that I mentioned had been found in Texas. What I failed to was that they had done the tour stop there in Texas, and clues came in because of that tour stop is why she was found.
That happened frequently
because all the media attention goes to these cases that are being there, and it brings people home. People begin to go, wait a minute, you know, I do remember something about that case.
And then they ask them to get in touch with the local police, and that's how it happened?
Absolutely.
There's
a 24-hour tip line with Q they can call, and, of course, always the law enforcement numbers listed.
Wow, that's great. Now, am I right that this next tour is going west, or did I not read that correctly, or do we know? What direction is she going?
I personally don't know yet what direction they're going. They came south and west in 2011. So, I believe it's going north.
Going north. Oh, maybe she'll be coming up my way in New England. Oh, that'd be great.
One thing they could do is check the website frequently, ncmissingpersons.org.
Okay.
And always up-to-date information at that site on any of the...
That's great. Well, I want to get to, we still got a fair amount of time here, about half an hour, but I wanted to talk again about the healing retreat. Can you discuss that? Where it takes place and what it's about?
I personally went in 2009. I've not been able to go back since, and I would love to go back.
You need to, Christy.
I know I do, Maureen. I sure
do. I've been every year. You need
I
to know.
Do. Oh, my goodness. I'd love to go, too. Tell us about it for those that aren't familiar with it.
Well, it was a life-changing retreat for families, I believe. It was a safe place for families to sit and share their stories. And even though the stories varied, you know, from age to circumstance to time of year and everything else, the pain and the struggle that you go through, all there was the same current of that going through the whole thing. And you mentioned Dwayne Bauer, and he was there and helped guide us through a lot of information that helped us realize, for one, I personally had problems with my short-term memory after Austin disappeared. And it was a little mind-boggling to me, because in my work, I've always depended on my memory as one of my tools of my trade. And he shared with us some of the things that people go through, and that was one of them. And I'm like, I'm not going crazy.
You felt normal. Yeah.
Everyone felt that way. Everyone did. Families went through the short-term memory problem.
Mm-hmm.
But a place that there was no one there that did not understand about what we were going through. And
so is it a two-day event or a weekend, a long weekend event? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what is it comprised of?
Maureen, why don't you go ahead? You've been more often.
It's from Friday to Sunday. It's in a kind of secluded, beautiful venue. The public doesn't have access to you. The media doesn't have access to you. Whatever is shared there stays there. Mm-hmm. And the families are very respectful of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have presenters as well as other families sharing? I mean, people presenting topics, or is it mostly families sharing?
I think the most powerful thing, and I think Christy probably can attest to that too, is on the first night, it's all the families sharing their story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very powerful.
Wow.
Dwayne Bowers is there through the whole thing. They presented classes. I don't know.
Seminars, something, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like a conference. This is not a conference setting. It's definitely a retreat,
mm-hmm.
but you learn so much. Kelly has different things. She also has massage people come in, which is great. Everybody loves that. This year they're going to do something different, which I'm kind of glad to see. They're going to discuss what happens when your answer comes in.
Ooh.
So that will be interesting. It's the first time they've done that, but I think they're starting to see a need.
Mm-hmm. And
to discuss that.
So tell us the date and times of that as well, and if people are interested and want to get in touch, how do they do that?
Go to projectjason.org, and it's on there, and it's in August, and I can't think of the exact date.
August 10th to 12th, I believe, right?
It might be.
10th to 12th in Omaha?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that right?
Or Lincoln. Well, it's kind of between Omaha and Lincoln, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
One
of the things that she brings out for that retreat is, and the name of it is Keys to Healing, and it's body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We had speakers there that helped people deal with things from a spiritual standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Had a physical therapist there doing massages and stuff for the body, but also a nutritionist talking about healthful eating and vitamins and things to help build you up. It's very easy for a family member going through this stress to allow their body to start failing.
So it sounds like it's a holistic perspective, you know, your whole body, mind type of thing too.
Yeah, exactly. We also had someone speak to how to deal with media, how to go after getting media attention for your loved one. So there was some educational stuff as well as the, you know, the retreat value. The retreat value was the biggest for me, but all of the information was very helpful.
What's the cost for something like this, and are there scholarships available?
They have.
Go ahead.
Project Jason funds quite a bit of the cost. They do have some angels that give to help defray costs for anybody, you know, that might not be able to.
Yeah.
Hey, so, but I wouldn't let money deter you and your family from signing up.
Okay. Well, that's good then. If there are resources from various places, that's what we like to hear. And glad there's.
And John, you know, I'd like to.
There's no money made off of this for Project Jason.
Right.
This is what their service they're doing for the families. But to get it into this very nice secluded venue, obviously there's costs.
Sure. I'm sure a lot of volunteers. Delilah, did you want to say something?
Yeah. I just want to let listeners know that that Project Jason and this whole retreat, this is also an outpouring of a family who has a missing son.
Yes.
Kelly Kowalski's son Jason has been missing, and they have created a wonderful organization, and this whole Keys to the Healing retreat is something I think is probably the best gift you could give a family. So, you know, if there's any businesses or people with a lot of money in their pocket and you need
corporations,
you know, fund a family to go to something like this. You know, people need a break just from regular life. But can you imagine the break you need? You really need this if you have a family member missing. It's so important.
I so agree with you. Yeah, that's such an excellent point. And, you know, take on a family or sponsor them financially. It would mean the world to them. I think you're so true. You know, it's so true. And so we would encourage anybody out there that has a, you know, works for a big corporation or looking for entities to give to, that, you know, to get in touch and to help with that, you know. And Delilah, there's an activity, an event happening sort of right in your backyard that's coming up. Can you tell us a bit about the dedication tree planting for Brittany?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I live in an area that is a resort where it seems that a lot of runaways run to. I don't think we, even as citizens that live here, have any clue as to the scope of this. And you find this in a lot of resort areas, and this is one thing we brought up the other day with the two runaway girls from Tennessee. This is another resort area. And so the media and law enforcement they sort of tend to cover up the bad news because that's going to affect tourism. But, you know, luckily in Brittany's case, this case has had a lot of very national attention. So in that sense, that's very good. But every year her family comes here to Myrtle Beach and has a vigil, or we did a walk one year. They'll do some fundraising. But this year they're going to plant a tree and dedicate it to me. And it's basically for a place for people in the area to come and, you know, to have a place where this is where Brittany, her spirit is, so to speak.
Went missing, yes, right.
Yeah,
So it should be there. And I was fortunate enough to meet this family at the Q Center conference, and they're very, very dedicated. And, you know, the people at Q have become their family. And what's so nice about this, and I can't brag enough, is that, you know, you automatically become a recruit of that organization and help. You can't help but be touched by them if they've helped you or if you've helped them in some way. I mean, I'm a homicide survivor, and I had the chance to go and present at the same time, and I can't tell you how odd I was to have that experience and to help out, and I'm forever going to be part of that family as well. I feel that in my heart. And I think any of these activities that we go to, any of these events, we're going to feel that. But, you know, I would be remiss. I don't want to miss, too, particularly because I'm an alumni of an event, the area of the country, where this is happening, the first annual night walk to shed light on the missing. I went to Kansas State University in Manhattan, and I understand
that.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
So I'm a K-Stater. Can you tell us a little bit about the night walk that's going to be held at Pittsburgh State in Kansas?
Go.
Well, the goal of the walk is to provide safety. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, Chrissy, go ahead.
Oh, okay. It's to provide safety and prevention information. It's to bring awareness to the missing persons and all the issues surrounding missing persons. It's a fundraising event to benefit Q, who helped. Jennifer Harnett is the founder of this event. And it's to honor her son, Joshua Hancock, who went missing and then was recovered not too long after that. And Q Center had helped her. And like so many of the families, she has looked for ways to help.
To give back.
To give back, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's
and
very...
And when is that? That's the 28th of April, is that right?
It is the 28th of April. And... It's at the Pittsburgh State University.
In Pittsburgh, Kansas, which
mm-hmm.
I don't know
Kansas.
How far that is away from K-State in Manhattan, the Little Apple, but you would know, maybe you would know better than I.
It's closer to Kansas City.
Okay. Kansas City, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri? There's two, right?
Both. Yeah.
Do people know that? There's two Kansas
It's about
cities.
2 hours out of the Kansas City area, hour and a half,
okay.
2 hours drive.
And so you can find more about it on the Q Center's website, ncmissingpersons.org. The registration information is there. It's a walk, so it's a $25 registration for an individual walker, $22 for teams of four or more, $22 for families of three or more. It's a real wonderful thing to honor this young man who went missing and then was recovered, but it's also to help an organization that, you know, the funds are raised for all searches. And one thing that I connected so strongly with Q about was Q doesn't just look for your blonde-haired, blue-eyed young women or children. You know, they look for anybody that's missing that the family registers with them. There is no boundary of who they'll search for. And as a member, I can tell you they don't give up. I'm very proud to be part of that organization now. And, they've brought me a long way.
Yeah. And in fact, when we had the conference that, I believe that Saturday evening, Monica sent out her troops to an area 2.5 hours away, and had it not been for the person that did the sonar presentation and Robin Moore with her cadaver dog, they assisted in recovering people out there. And if anyone wants to go and look at that blog that I did, Reflections on the 8th Annual Q Center, I think it's a good story because I made the focus about what Q does, and rather than this is what Donna Gore presented about or so-and-so, because it's really the essence of what they do, which was so important, you know. Go ahead.
You touched a lot of lives with your presentation that weekend, and so I, for one, want to thank you and appreciate what you did. And
thank you.
I've heard that from a lot of the families, that you did a fantastic job.
Really?
You did. And
thank you. I'd love to come back. Just invite me. Tell everybody.
Can we jump back to the walk for a minute?
All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When we were talking about the walk, and when we were talking about Joshua, and how Q was helping to look for Joshua, or starting to, there was a little bit more of a story to that. It was Monica, it was me, and it was Missy Smith, the mother of missing, found, murdered Kelsey Smith, and all three of us were coordinating for Q to come in the next day. And as we were coordinating it all, Joshua was found.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Deceased. But it was, you know, several families, the Smiths and me,
is
working
that right?
together with Q to help help find Joshua.
And that's, you know, there again, Maureen, that's another family that has gone on to do, you know, a
great
lot
things.
Of really wonderful things, and, you know, with their daughter missing and so forth. But I would like for you to touch on what you've been doing with NAMIS. You're the Kansas, what is it, advisory team member, or what, I can't remember what it's called.
It's a victim advocate. I was nominated into the NAMIS Academy, and I attended their Albuquerque one.
Wow.
Excellent training. So I'm the victim's advocate for Kansas for NAMIS.
And why don't you explain to listeners that might not know the importance of what NAMIS does and the benefits to families?
Sure.
Right.
What I found out early on in my search, when I'd work two jobs and come home and I would have to sit at the computer all night, there was not one spot for me to go to. And I was looking for my husband's bones. I honestly thought he was deceased. So there was not one spot for me to go to find an unidentified person and see if it was my husband. I was having to spend hours, countless hours, and very few coroners at that time had anything even up on their websites, you know, any characteristics or photos or anything. So I'd have to, you know, pick up the phone and call or try to email these people and say, I hear you have this such and such body. Can you tell me, you know, some characteristics of this? So it was a mess. I mean, it was like finding a needle in a haystack. It was just horrible.
Right.
So early on, I had been in contact with Todd Matthews. He had had me on his show. And Todd is really, I think, the force behind NAMIS. He had seen the same thing that I was seeing, how hard it is to match up an unidentified person and a missing person. So thus was born NAMIS. So now we have a repository, the nation's first repository, that is trying to get all of them listed into one spot. So I, as an advocate, I'm kind of charged with training police and getting police to learn about NAMIS, to start using it. And it's kind of amazing. You were talking about going to K-State. We had a case down in Manhattan area, and County Sheriff's Office immediately had this young man in NAMIS. I didn't even have to tell him. I was like, oh, my God, we're doing good. We're getting
all right
out there.
Very good. Now, how new is this, that this has just come together and that you're trying to train police departments, et cetera, that you can actually go to this repository? Are we talking 6 months? How long are we talking that this has been there?
That NAMIS has been up?
Yeah.
I had the beta on my site since, gosh, I don't know. I'm going to say 2007.
Really?
When did they go live? I can't remember. Like 2000.
I think
I'm
going to
say 9 or 10.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
What do you think, 9 or 10? Yeah.
I could be off on that. It's that short-term memory thing. It's still going on.
And we're getting old.
No. It's my short-term memory from all this trauma. I just know it.
Okay.
But we're just now trying to get the word out. Billy's Law is going to do so much if we can get that passed, which we almost did. We were so close.
Right.
But as soon as we get that passed, it's really going to mandate all coroners, all medical examiners, all police to enter their cases into NAMIS. I mean, right now in Kansas, there are over 500 people missing.
Wow.
But if you pull up the Kansas Bureau of Investigation site, who has control of the missing in the state, you see, I don't know, maybe 5 people on there.
Wow.
So
that's pitiful.
I want to get a hold of all 500 names and get them into NAMIS. I mean, it just makes sense. I mean,
and
people don't know that they're out there missing. Who's looking? I mean, who's trying to match them up with anything?
How long does it take to actually input the data for one particular person? Is it like 5-10 minutes each? Or, I mean, is there an average?
Just depends on how much information you have. If you have a lot of information, I'd say about 20 minutes to half hour.
Mm-hmm.
I tell the families on the new cases to input their people themselves.
Yeah.
Because they can pack that file so well with keywords, things like what did your loved one carry in their pocket normally? Yeah, something like a guitar pick. I mean, something like simple like that can match and get them their answer.
Sure. Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah, their habits, if they had a tattoo, whatever, something idiosyncratic regarding that particular person that maybe, someone else wouldn't necessarily think of, that just generically entering this information. You know, that's very exciting. We have about 5 minutes left. Oh my God, the time has just flown by. I hope you'll come back. I really want you to come back. I think it's been wonderful. Before we go, I want to make another announcement too. Very soon, we are very pleased, Delilah and I, to announce that we are going to have on Shattered Lives a sister of Maureen Brainerd Barnes, who is one of the victims of the Long Island serial killer. Maureen lives in, Melissa Kahn, the sister, lives in Connecticut, and she is doing a fundraiser in the town of Colchester on the 21st of April at 1 o'clock. And it is a motorcycle stunt event with a DJ, and it's at 367 Lebanon Avenue. If you'd like more information, you'd go to the CP stuntsforjustice.com and a phone 203-983-0424, and they have raffle prizes, food, and T-shirts. Everything goes toward the donation to Crime Stoppers, because she, although her sister has been found and identified, she's trying to help the other families who have not found their missing loved ones, and they are trying to increase the reward on Crime Stoppers, which has been up to about $25,000, and we will be putting a posting up shortly, I believe, on my website so that other people can see that. So as you can tell, there's many, many good things going on. Delilah, can you just mention briefly before we go to, we have like 3 minutes, what is the event that Susan's doing regarding Holding My Hand Through Hell?
She was invited SEMO.
SEMO, Search Dogs?
Yes, into Cape Girardeau, Missouri. So she's going to be doing a series of events in that area, three or four of them. Actually, I think they have scheduled up there. So she'll be at a big banquet one night. She'll be at a church. She'll be probably at a restaurant. So there's several different things going on in the Cape Girardeau area, and that's going to be, I think she leaves to go there like the 28th of April, so she'll be there for about 4 or 5 days, traveling around doing her thing. So
that's cool. And there's also one other one we have listed here. Can you tell us quickly about the one in Texas, A Journey of 1,000 Miles Begins One Step, Hope for Texas Missing?
It's going to be in Mesquite, Texas, June 3rd, and this is a fundraiser. I think this, isn't it the Texas State Outreach Coordinator, Christy? Are they the ones that are sponsoring this? Christy? Hello?
Christy, are you there? Hello? Did we lose Christy? I don't know. Who else is on the line?
Are
you still there? Okay.
My little thing. Anyway. It's
in Mesquite.
To the Lisa Stone case in that area. But I think it's sponsored by, isn't it sponsored by the Texas Outreach Coordinator, Christy? Are they putting it together?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Wonderful. Yes. Well, that sounds like a great one, too. There's so many good things going on. So I think we all have to check these websites. We have to find out, and we have to, if we can't go ourselves, try to help sponsor other people. And in the meantime, I want to thank all of my guests. It's been a wonderful pleasure, and I hope you'll all come back. I hope you'll invite me to an event. If there's something I can help with, I certainly will. And everyone, I want you to go to www.donnagore.com. Keep listening to Shattered Lives, and remember, when it comes to helping survivors of crime, don't just try, make it happen. So thank you, Delilah. Thank you, Mo. Thank you, Christy. And be safe and keep in touch with me, okay?
Thank you for having us.